welcome to this week's Road Talk. And to remind all listeners, current and new listeners, that Road Talk is typically designed as a safe space for men to talk about issues, whether they're mental issues, emotional issues, and these can relate to relationships, work, how we're feeling about ourselves, finances, and really just encouraging us men to speak, because we all know the narrative, men do not talk. And while that has its basis, I don't believe it's the entire truth. I feel that men do talk, and men will be encouraged to talk further if they feel they're in a safe environment where they can speak openly their views and thoughts. So that's the main purpose of Bro Talk. And I'm really pleased today to welcome someone who only wears a t-shirt, but active. A current client of mine has done miraculous work in a short space of time. His name is David. David, how are you doing?
Very well, Gary. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. And David, you can let people know which part of the world you're from.
I mean, Edwinstowe in the UK, middle part of Nottinghamshire, call it Sherwood Forest, Robin Hood Country.
Robin Hood Country, very yeah. Famous. And how long have you lived there, David?
I've lived here with Lisa for approximately 3 years now. Prior to that, I lived in Retford, where I was born and bred in Retford, which is about 17 miles away.
Okay, 17 miles north, east?
I'll call it east.
Okay. You know, us Londoners, we get a nosebleed once we go past the Watford Gap.
Yeah, we don't. The country don't evolve past the Gap View, doesn't it?
Even though I support a team from up north. So.
we're in the dark ages compared to what down to.
David, your profession?
I'm now a coach driver. I've been doing 31 years with mental health services within the NHS.
Wow, so that is a change.
Massive.
And the pun is intended. Did you change for your own mental health?
Well, as they always say, you don't work in a flour mill without flour on you.
Yeah.
So my mental health arguably would have changed over a period of time. But I found out a lot about myself, learned a lot about myself over those periods of time. But since retiring from the NHS and doing this job now, life's so much easier. So there's no stress really involved compared to where I was before. So I'd say my mental health has improved since I left or retired from the NHS.
That's a brave move, David. I can imagine the word brave being mentioned a few times throughout our talk together, because so many of us are in that situation whereby we either feel exhausted or we need a change or our passion is elsewhere, but we don't find it as easy to make that move, whether it's for financial reasons or the wrong time or just not having the confidence. So what caused you to actually make that step?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be within the NHS early enough to retire or be able to retire at the age of 55. So I was quick to take that one up on board. I needed to be away from that place. It wasn't the same as it was when I first started. I've always had a passion for driving. And as I spoke to you in our sessions, my dad was a coach driver all of his life. So I felt it was almost like a promise I'd said to myself, but to go and do coach driving and try and follow my dad's footsteps, really. So it's a passion more than anything else.
Great. And David, as we both made the listeners aware that you're currently engaging in counselling, are you okay to share the reason prompts you to seek counselling? Because this is a step that a lot of men need to do, but don't, what's they have the courage, but are slightly either suspicious or fearful of test. What's it about? Share with your insight.
I'm happy to talk about it freely now and openly. Initially, I thought I could probably do it myself and deal with it myself by talking to Lisa, my wife. Over many years of just feeling anger, frustration, and my mouth ran away with me. I was quite venomous in what I was saying to people, whether it be at work or at home. I believe it had major impacts on my first two marriages, and I don't want that to happen this time. So it was about reaching out, because I couldn't do it myself. It was about reaching out. And for me, fortunately, I found you, and life is slowly improving, and I just want to carry on.
And what was the, was it a gradual process, or was there a moment whereby you said, well, I need help, or did Lisa, your wife, say, David, you need to do something about this?
I think it was a gradual thing, but it came to a head, I would probably say, just after Christmas, early New Year. We'd had an argument, and as I walked away from her, really hurtful comments that I knew for a fact were going to hurt, but I thought, you're having it anyway. And as I got in the car, I just drove away. I didn't need the time away. But as I drove away, I thought, you've really done it now. This has to stop. I can't continue doing this because I don't want to hurt any more people, and more so the ones I love and care for.
So, David, you expressed your anger for your mouth, for your words.
Yep, absolutely.
And you said it at a moment just after Christmas. You knew it was going to hurt. You knew it was going to cause damage, but you said it anyway.
Yep.
Was that typical of you?
I've been, yeah. Like I said, and we know, spoke yeah. back. So if I said it was at least once a week, I'd be like that with somebody.
And David, you said you found me, but you've been huge in your development, self-awareness. And from this, know that you expressed your anger through your words. You knew it could hurt and cut. Looking back, what do you think the cause was it? The cause behind it? What was the reason for you to use anger in that way?
I've never been a physical violent person, but I've always thought that my words could hurt. I know we spoke about it. Arguably, it was a sense of power where I belittle somebody. If I felt that they'd hurt me or whatever and tried to put me down. But I think I just wanted other people to know what I knew. And if I knew more about them, more about the job than what they did, I'd let them know that. So it was a power thing for me, but it made me feel good at the time, initially. But I'd no sooner say it, I'd be going back and apologising for not necessarily what I said, but the way I said it, because it was venomous. I know it was venomous, and I regret it completely now.
So you knew you had the power, your power was knowledge, and there was a need of yours for other people to recognise it and know that you had this power.
Yeah.
Some of our audience are in New York, work within the yachting industry, and it's true of other industries as well, but particularly the way some of them struggle, the way they're captains or owners speak to them in a way that is derogatory, in a way that, yes, I'm the person in power and you need to recognize that knowledge. And it absolutely don't show up on the surface because it's a very male industry for the most part. But what it does to that person inside, it cripples them, David. Now, I know you did do that intentionally, but do you now, as you're through your reflection, appreciate how your damage may have affected, how your words may have affected other people?
Absolutely. I certainly wouldn't like to have been spoken to the way I spoke to people. And like I say, in the main, I was fine with everybody, but there were times where my mouth, and because I didn't think, I think that's what the main cause was, but I regret everything I've said to people. And again, as I've said to you, there are people I would like to give them the opportunity, sit them down and speak to them and apologise yet again. I know I can't change anything because it's been said, but I would like to apologise and try and right a lot of the wrongs that I've done.
And that's very admirable, David, and vulnerable of you to say, to acknowledge the wrong you've done, and also say that you'd welcome the opportunity to apologise to people that you know that you've hurt in the past. David, for our conversation, you come from a very stable background. You're not free from trauma, but you came from a stable background. And it sounds like you wanted people to know about your power and recognise, acknowledge it. It's the underlying need for approval. So where did that come from, David? Because what I know of you, a stable upbringing, good background, mum and dad, you love and siblings, but yet this need for approval from others.
Like I say, in the workplace, more so than anything, I believe I've done time served. I'd got the knowledge, but at the grade that I was, there were people that were coming in of a higher grade, been to university, then they think they walk straight into the place and think they know it all. And clearly they didn't. So other individuals of the same grades that were coming in, but listening to what I had to say, working alongside me and learning the job from the ground up. Those people that did that, I didn't necessarily be nasty with, but the ones that came in thought they know it all and tried to ram it down my throat that they knew best. At times it was about, I'm going to show you. I know exactly what I'm doing. I know your job inside out, and I will put you in your place now rather than you doing it to me. So it was about being, I suppose, arguably, I didn't want to be embarrassed in front of other people. And I wanted them to be in the situation that I didn't want to be in,
right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Was it more or less striking first while they're being struck for them to say, just because you've been to university, got a degree, don't think you're better than me. So I'm going to let you know that I'm as good as you, if not better, by my knowledge.
Yeah.
So although it was personal, it appears, David, to be more of a system within the industry, because it's this industry that's allowed people with universities with hard experience to come in at a level higher than you.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like I said to you, I wasn't a qualified nurse within that setting. But time served, I knew a lot about the day-to-day running, the management and that of Brampton Hospital. And new people coming in, had no idea. Yes, they've been to university and they're very bright. Academically, they're very bright. I haven't got a question with that. But the naive in that setting, being a secure, high secure setting, they're very naive.
Yeah.
Yes, some individuals thought they knew it all. And I thought I could leave them and leave them to suffer with the fact that they don't know what they're doing. So they are going to suffer from the patient having a go at them.
Or yes.
They could listen to the wrath of me telling them exactly how I thought and what I thought. But also then when I've said that and offloaded that, I'm still there to support them after that and nurture them. So I'm not trying to justify what I did because it was wrong, but I was always there after to try and nurture and still support them with the job.
So you'll breathe fire on them and then you'll come with a bucket of water.
Yeah.
And for us men, to say us deliberately, because I'm included, we do hold on to the, which is a right of every human being, but that respect. In a school playground, if there's a fight or someone's teasing other, oh, we disrespect you, don't give speech like that. Was that going on for you, David, about holding on to your respect that you had for yourself and making sure that others recognise that respect?
Yeah, certainly within the workplace, it was about respect. As I've said to you, it's not a given respect, it's earned.
Yeah.
I believe I almost did deserve some kind of respect due to the fact that I'd been there that long. So at least show me some kind of respect in it, that I didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't know the job. Yeah, ultimately, because they were of a higher grade, they're going to be in charge of me on a daily basis. I get that. And I go with that. But at least I have some respect to what I've done over the years. And sometimes that wasn't forthcoming.
And you made it clear, David, that this was primarily within the workplace. But we're also aware that what happens at work often spills out in our private lives. So for you, David, how did that show itself in your private life in terms of the anger that you were demonstrating within the workplace?
I could conceivably, I always tried to keep my private life and my work life separate. So I'd walk out the front door of the hospital and think, I'm going home. And that's what I did for many a year. But then it started to manifest itself where I was still taking that attitude home. So then the wife had probably at the time, the wife may say something quite innocuous, really, and I'd spin on them. And the level of, as I say, not verbal abuse as in threatening and stuff like that, but the amount of abuse that would come out of my mouth in a venomous way, no one should go through that. And at that point, I'd spew it out, and I'd storm around the house like a bear with sore head, and then I'd come back and I'd apologise and hope that we could move on. And in time we did, but it was still the hurt that I knew I could inflict on people.
Had anyone spoken to you like that, David, in terms of the hurt you inflicted on other people? Did anyone portray that to you?
Not to the extent that I did back on them, no. I would feel disrespected in what and hurt, really, by what people would say, but not to the level I did. Because I know you should. There's another saying, you should fight fire with fire. If somebody was actually like that with me, God knows how far I'd go with it.
Right.
At that time. But now, like I said to you, I think it was last week, it goes to a point now, I just think, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Just get on with it.
And when you, because I'm sure many people can identify with what you're sharing, I certainly can. And after you've breathed that fire onto that person, when you then have your own private moment, how do you feel inside? What's going through your mind?
I apologize for this. I feel absolutely shit about myself. I feel ashamed. Well, I did feel ashamed. I certainly do now, good. I've even thought about it even more. Embarrassed. There's strong words about how you can possibly feel about yourself, but yeah, I hated myself really now for what I did.
And in that moment, continue to appreciate your honesty and openness, which is a huge part of you, David. In those moments when you reflected, you did feel good about yourself. How did you then work through that? Would you then ignore it and carry on day life? Would you then actively do something?
I'd carry on my daily job and everything that I needed to do. But it was, for me, it was then finding that the moment whereas I'd got that individual again on their own, and I'd go and speak to him, or I'd say to him, have you got a minute? And I'd take him away into a private area, away from everybody, and speak to him that way. So I was trying to obviously rectify the issue that I'd caused, but I wouldn't let it go in my own head until I got the chance to speak to him. So it would resonate in my head, and it could be 3-4 hours before I got a chance to speak to him properly. So that would be in my head, and I couldn't get away from that. That's what I'd done to somebody.
Okay. So you carried it around mentally. It was mental torment that was what you'd done.
There were some days I was really mentally tired because I'd done what I'd done and couldn't get it out of my head until I'd spoke to somebody.
And just staying here for the moment, Dave, because like I said, I'm sure many people have to identify with what you're sharing. It didn't stop future behaviour repeating the same pattern.
No, I just, my behaviour, I wouldn't say it necessarily got worse, but it certainly didn't improve any until the point that the back end of time at Rampton, I thought, I've got no life here. When I leave here, I've got to do something with it. Hence why we've tried both Lisa and myself to talk about different bits and bobs and try and put things to bed. But the opportunity to speak to yourself, the third party, having not known a thing about me, but allowing me to talk and express, has put me in a far better space, both mentally and physically, that me and Lisa now talk more, maybe now, than we've ever done. And she allows me to talk. And we just generally get on a lot better now than I would say in the short space time we've been together. We get on better now.
That's fantastic, David. It really is. Great credit to you. And you've mentioned today, and obviously when we've been working together, about taking that time to think.
Massive.
And David, we're about the same age. Do you remember that advert years ago? Is it the channel Stop, Think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember the point. I mean, the point was Stop, Think, and then Listen. Stop, Think, Look, Listen. Or Look, Walk. I don't know. But you get the point. And we don't think enough, do we? Especially, I would say, some of us men. It's act first.
Absolutely, yeah. And as I say, I think that's one of the biggest things that I can say and probably advise anybody, certainly us men, that just that moment to think before it leaves your mouth. Because once it's left your mouth, you can't go away, it's gone. And that's how it's going to hurt. So for me, being able to have that moment to think, then say, has been huge for me. And I know for a fact that's improved me inside as well, not just mentally, but inside. I don't feel the pain like I knew for a fact I was feeling.
And you've mentioned a significant word there, David, pain, and slight change of direction. And whilst it was anger that ultimately reached you reaching out for support regards context of counselling, there was a deep pain that you was carrying regards to your father. Are you able to share?
Yeah, quite happy to do that. Apologise when I started crying again. Yeah, we'd been to a cricket final. My dad was driving the bus. He dropped everybody off. And then he got home. And then I had a phone call straight away from my mum saying that my dad had collapsed. So I ran round. I was doing CPR on him when the ambulance crew got there. They said they got a rhythm, but subsequently he passed. He'd already died in the ambulance. And for many a year, I blamed myself for favouring my dad and not keeping him alive, bearing in mind that I received all the training that I had. And at that point, I thought I should be able to keep him alive, so I let my dad down.
And that is a huge burden, as we worked through, David, for any human being to carry.
Yeah, I know that now, but at that time, and for many years after, I thought, I can't think of anything else. I can't see why it was anybody else's fault or anything like that. Obviously now, and as time's gone on, knowing that my dad had a second massive heart attack and that's how he'd passed, and there was no way anybody was going to bring him back, to allow myself to almost be at peace with myself, realise it wasn't my fault, and to let it go. Bloody frozen, Phil. But yeah, let it go and accept that was going to be.
And I'm thinking about the David then. And I know how much you love your dad and the close relationship you had. And to have that guilt carried around, illegitimate guilt, but for you it was real guilt that it was your fault. That has to leak out. When you talk about you hurting people with words and it's going to hurt, but you've got to do it anyway. And there's often say this book that I read, Hurts People. And if we feel hurt and pain, that's one of the common methods of us releasing it, by hurting others, because we're hurting.
I remember doing an induction at Rampton, and we got talking about different bits and bobs that we had grief and whatever, and how we had time to talk about it. And strangely enough, there was a vicar on our table. It was part of the hospital setting, and he was talking to me, and I started talking. It was the first time. So that'd be probably say about 10 years after my dad had died, and I'd never grieved for my dad. Even at the funeral, I never cried. I couldn't cry. Don't know why, just couldn't. And I started talking about my dad, and the session, all that opportunity, was cut short because the person presenting at the time said, well, move on. And Charles, that was the vicar, he said, hang on a minute, we just need to finish this off. And with that, I can't. It don't matter, don't worry. But that was the time when I really...
Right.
Just, I had an opportunity to offload and maybe be at peace with that. And because it got cut short, I might just dismissed it and then just carried on.
Yes, Dave, if I remember correctly, you said about returning to work very soon after your dad's death, and your pattern was to avoid, not face anything in terms of pain. It'd be like, avoid, move on. Is that correct?
Yeah, it happened on the Friday night, Saturday morning that my dad passed. And on the Sunday morning, I went back into work because I believe that was how I was going to cope with it. People at work, there were two that I worked with that were actually on the coach that night. They couldn't believe I was actually at work, and all I said to them was, just leave me alone and I'll be okay. I got through the day. But then the following day, I removed my dad's car from in front of the house and took all the tablets that my dad was on due to him having a triple heart bypass years previous to that, so he's on medication. I removed all that and took it to my house so my mum didn't have to see the car or deal with the tablets. And I got, because it was classed as a suspicious death at that point, the police round who interviewed and took medication away and so on and such. And as the younger brother, as I said to you, I've got an older one, Andy. I dealt with all that and it felt like I had to do it. Now thinking I really shouldn't have had to do it, been the younger one. But that is probably another reason why the guilt and the pain lasted so long.
Yeah. And going back to what you said a few moments ago, David, that you realised it wasn't your fault. And from that knowledge and receiving, accepting that knowledge, you were able to let it go.
Yeah, eventually. It did get easier, don't get me wrong, but to actually now have given time to almost talk it through myself, not just with our sessions, but myself. I feel far more at peace now with that, and even my mum. And as I said, we've got pictures now up in the house of my mum and dad. So I've got a constant reminder and that they're still looking at on at me. And I know they are. And I know they still love me. But it's far easier to deal with now than it ever was.
Kudos to you, David. So, David, finally, what would you say to men out there who's listening or may listen in the future who are experiencing similar struggles that you went through, either through hurting people with their mouth, taking illegitimate blame for something that's not really their fault, but they feel it's their fault, and they're battling with it, consciously or subconsciously?
Yeah, ultimately, the fact that you're battling it yourself is huge. But you need to take time to search and seek out people. Because I know there's another phrase there, an advertisement, it was Busby, it's good to talk.
Yeah.
And believe me, it is good to talk. I found peace with that. I believe I'm a better person for talking it. I never really thought I was that good with words, because I've never had to. But I would advocate that everybody... And it might not be, no disrespect, Gary, it might not even be about coming to somebody like yourself, a counsellor, but find somebody that you can sit and talk to.
Yeah.
Because carrying that pain that I carried for so many years, it really can destroy you if you don't let it go. Yeah. And I would say to people is, don't let it destroy you. From somebody that's known, somebody that's carried the pain, the hurt, and the fact I could have done over the years, destroyed so many people, and just wish that I didn't, because I wish I'd have dealt with it many years ago. I wish I'd have gone to a counsellor 20 years ago, put it that way. Or have the opportunity to sit down, talk to somebody, and let me talk.
Yeah. Insightful words, David. And they're more than words, because you've lived it, you've proven it, and you can clearly see the benefit and results, which not only could you and I testify, but your wife Lisa can too, and your family.
Yeah, absolutely. She's proud of me for doing it, but ultimately I'm proud of myself for doing it.
Yeah.
It took a lot of gut to do this, quite anxious about how it was going to go.
But when you say do this, you're referring to the counselling?
The counselling, yeah. Because part of me, prior to the counselling, yes, I knew I had to let go, but I also didn't want to let go, because it was the way that I always still had my mum and dad in my thoughts.
Yeah.
But the thoughts I have of my mum and dad now are a lot more positive, as opposed to the negative thoughts that I got about the guilt and stuff like that.
David, you're a model for men.
I'm not that good looking, Gary. Sorry.
In terms of your story, your journey, your transparency, and because of that, you definitely have become a better man. And
I feel that, yes. But I haven't got there yet.
No, it's an ongoing journey, and it's continuing that journey. And you recognise that you're not there yet, but you also recognise you're not where you used to be.
No, I'm a million miles away from where I used to be.
And as I'm speaking, David, I'm really trying to resist the temptation of bringing your profession into it, with you being a coach and the journey, but the two do go hand in hand.
I like that. At some point, I'll use that.
Yes, sir. So thank you again for sparing your time, your one day off, to utilise it to speak about your experience for the benefit of others. And I'm sure whoever listens to this, it will touch them, and hopefully they'll have the heart to pass it on to other men in need, because this is important. This is vital. Yeah. And you're living proof of that once again. So, David, thank you once more for attending Bro Talk. Enjoy speaking to you. The more I hear about your story, the more real it is and the more inspirational it is. And I do believe that part of your journey going forward will be speaking in different forms to men.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks, David. Okay. So, those of you who listen to Bro Talk and have been hopefully touched by this in a courageous way, please remember the words of David about don't carry this He said, I wish I'd reached out 20 years ago, but the time is always the right time. But when we're carrying pain and battle against us, we're destroying ourselves. And we don't want to be doing that as men. We need to do it for ourselves and also for our loved ones. So once again, remember those words. Do not do this on your own. Talk to someone, whether it's a professional counsellor or whether it's a trusted person that you can share and be listened to.